I'm blessed to speak about 3 times a week around the world, and I've learned a lot about speeches. And the thing about speeches that I really want to teach to start, probably the best takeaway I can give you, is that I was one of those kids. I went to law school, business school, undergrad, obviously high school. And I have a reminder every single month. Living in California, it's about $1,200 a month I get this bill, and it's for my storage unit. And inside my storage unit is a ton of banker's boxes. And they are filled with every note that I ever took in undergrad, law school, graduate school, Tony Robbins, Wayne Dyer, Bob Proctor, the millions of dollars in personal development and recovery that I have spent, thinking that if I take notes about everything that they say, this will be golden. But it's not. You know, one thing I've learned in life is it starts when your heart starts and it stops when your heart stops. And we get 24 hours a day to learn lessons. The lessons will keep on coming, I promise you, and they'll keep coming until you learn them. But I want you to think about this. You will forget every lesson you've ever learned or has been learned, but you have the power, which AI is making a little bit more elevated in your awareness, you have the power to remember, remind, and recollect yourself of every lesson ever learned. Some people may be familiar with the Akashic Records. I call it my cloud. There's a huge database of stuff. So when we're sitting in these types of outings, I will call them, I want you to remember this. Just write down or capture with your phones. Fine, Patricia, don't worry, you won't offend me. Every once in a while I speak to my kids and they don't look up at me, so it's not a big deal. But capture what resonates with you. That's it. I want you in life. I have a capture folder. And every Sunday, I review my capture folder. And I capture, whenever I hear a nugget that resonates with me, I'll give you my golden nugget to start, the one that knocked me to my knees and still does. You're either humble or you're about to be. When I heard you're either humble or you're about to be, and when you hear my story, you'll know why. It dropped me to my knees, and I immediately texted it to myself, and it went into my capture folder. But what I've learned through the years is it's not just those things that I agree with that move me in a positive way, but it's the things that irritate me or I completely despise that resonate with me, right? Intuition doesn't know time, it just knows energy. Infinite time is within the context of intuition, and intuition, things that resonate with you, it's God or your God or my cloud or whatever you believe in, it's cool by me. I believe in best option faith. Simply something bigger than me that knows everything, loves me, protects me, promotes me, perfects me more than my mom. And if I come up with a better thing, let me know. I'm just humble in the respect that I just go for the best option. That's why I believe in, by the way, that's why I believe in past lives. I love life. So you give me an option, you get one life or millions of lifetimes, I'm going with the best option. Nobody can prove it either way, so I'm good with taking the best option. But capture what resonates with you, because your intuition, when you see or hear something that you don't agree with, it's just as important as when you do. And so I suggest you not only capture what resonates with you, but figure out a system to access it. Not only will you save $1,200 a month, but you actually be able to remember, remind, and recollect with what's important to you, what God's telling you. Hey, buddy, you should be aware of this. You should be aware of this. That's why it's resonating with you. That's why great people make you feel a certain way. They'll tell you, you won't remember anything I say, just how you feel. That's why. Intuition has no time to it. If you don't believe me, anybody ever play craps? Yeah, I played craps when in my previous life. And I remember sitting at their craps table, and God told me heart eight, which means double fours. So what did I do? I immediately bet the heart eight. And most of the time, no heart eight. But eventually, heartache came. Or maybe no heartache came, but I was supposed to learn a different lesson from no heartache coming, and God was telling me heartache, so I could learn this lesson that intuition has no time. But what it does have is importance. So it's really important to learn lessons and to remember, remind, and recollect those lessons, because they will be important sometime. May not even be in this lifetime, but that's cool. But statistically, understanding the difference between intelligence, inspiration, intuition will make a difference in your human experience, which is what? Regulated by the time heart starts till the time it stops. Separated by one certainty, 24 hours. Only certainty. You are guaranteed by your God 24 hours a day, every day of your life, except for the last day you'll be cheated. So live it that way. And I'm going to teach you some practices to utilize the human experience within the infinite. And it'll parallel a lot of things that you do yourselves working in recovery in so many different ways that hopefully will help you empower other people to enjoy their human experience as well. So I'm going to start with my story and tag in, hopefully, and tie in some lessons that resonate with you. And they certainly will. Either you'll agree with them wholeheartedly and write them down, or you'll think they're stupid and write them down as well. So now I'm of great value whether you like me or not. Done this before. So I believe my life has had three different worlds in it. And the first world that I was born into was a world of scarcity, of not enough. A world, many of you, anybody grow up poor in here? Yeah, I feel sorry for the rest of you and my own kids. But a world where everything happened to me and I was a victim. My dad left when I was 5. My mom, single mom with 6 kids. She was a second grade teacher. Unbelievable mom. It's hard to talk about my mom without getting choked up because she was that extraordinary of a person. She's my hero. Unfortunately, she passed away about 3 months ago. Which, by the way, was a reminder of humility. Because I remember telling my wife when I left my mom in hospice, and she remembered who I was. I remember I just had gotten an honorary doctorate, so I told my mom, I said, "Mom, you told me I was going to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a failure. And I'm happy to tell you I'm all three." And she said, "You certainly are a great failure, I'll tell you that. And I'm proud of you, and I love you, and I always have your back." But when my mom passed, I remember my wife saying to me when we left the hospital, "Are you going to be okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure. I'm going to be fine. My dad had passed. I deal with all types of people who lose loved ones. I'm going to be fine." But when I found out, I wasn't okay. And humility, I remember telling myself, "You're either humble or you're about to be." So I was born into this extraordinary family, 6 kids. All of them went to the Ivy Leagues, graduated summa cum laude, Harvard, Penn, Columbia. I'm the low end of the academic gene pool in my family. I thought that I had been challenged academically because I missed a few, got 1B in high school, missed a few problems on the SAT, which ranked me the lowest in my family. I had no idea until I went to college that I actually was a decent student, if not a good one, compared to my siblings. But my mom worked 2 jobs. She was a second grade teacher, came home, packed our dinner in a paper bag, and filled up turnstiles with greeting cards in convenience stores, just so we could eat. And I have a saying about parenting. You know, my kids don't listen to me, but they watch me. So I don't teach my kids. They're not taught by me. They're caught from me. They catch everything. And so it puts a different relationship with my children when I know they're watching me. And I watch my mom. My siblings, they watch my mom. And so I only was unhappy when there was financial stress. I had these great siblings, this great family, this unbelievable mom, and didn't realize that, 6 kids in 2-bedroom apartment was anything to worry about. But when something broke down or she couldn't afford something, I'd catch her crying. So the time I was 5, I said, I know, I'm going to be rich. I'm going to be rich so that my mom has financial security. I'm going to buy her the biggest house and the car. At 5 years old, all I wanted to do was be rich. So everything I did was to buy my happiness and love was to try to make money. And my original idea, which Greg knows, was to be a professional football player. Thank you for not laughing. Greg did when I told him in high school. it's funny because I'm like, I want to be a lawyer. Everyone's like, yeah, of course, you're the epitome of a lawyer. No problem. When I say the NFL, everybody laughs. But I wanted to be a football player because I loved football. And what I got out of it, because I did play college football, and self-admittedly, I am a below average college football. I used to say I'm an average college football player, but stayed friends with my college football coach, actually had him on an interview at SoFi where my offices are. And he's like, "Let's be honest, Dave, you're kind of a below average college football player." But that's the closest to my potential the closest to my potential that I've ever been. And the lessons that I learned growing up, even though misdirected because I thought money would buy me happiness, the lesson that I learned was, and Bob Parsons, the founder of GoDaddy, Bob Parsons said this to me in an interview. We were at the Super Bowl. He said, "Dave, you know, if you love what you do," and I rolled my eyes immediately. I'm like, "Dude, you're like one of my mentors, and I want to learn." You're not going to say you never work a day in your life. But he didn't disappoint me because he didn't. He said, "If you love what you do and you can learn to love what you don't like or love about what you do or about who is with you, life will tell you all its secrets. It'll give its cheat codes. It'll make life easy because you'll identify the dis-easy and you'll practice making the dis-easy easy." And for me, that's what resonated with me when it came to college football, because there's a lot not to love or like about my college football experience. But I learned to love what I didn't like or love about what I truly love. And I will tell you, as far as marriage advice goes, it's the best marriage advice I gave my wife as well. It'd be very helpful if you can learn to love what you don't like or love about who you love. I love everything about my wife, so I didn't need to put it into practice. So moving forward, I ended up wanting to be a doctor. And the reason I wanted to be a doctor is they made lots of money. My oldest brother was doing his residency at UCLA, and he already seemed to be on his way to making a lot of money. And so I, after my first season in football in college, I will tell you, my first play in college, I was the fastest guy on the college team, but I weighed 147 pounds. Not very useful, but still on the bullet on the kickoff team. So I'm flying down. I'm going to prove to everyone I'm going to be an NFL star. Of course, I get down there first, and I drill the ball carrier. And I think to myself, oh, yes, this is it. Next thing I know, I'm literally flying backwards, and the guy stepped on me and kept running. I laid on my back, literally saying to myself, "Doctor, lawyer, or failure." By the way, that guy was Christian Okoye, who the next year was AFC Player of the Year. His nickname was Nigerian Nightmare. He's a friend of mine. He lives here and really nice guy now, but I still have nightmares. But I decide to go to med school. I'm going to go see my brother in the hospital. I walk up to my brother, and he said, "Dave, what's the matter?" I said, "I hate hospitals. I'm 18 years old, freshman in college." And he looks at me, he's like, "What?" I'm like, "I hate hospitals." "You're pre-med, bro." I go, "Yeah, I know, but I'm not going to be a hospital doctor." He goes, "What do you mean?" I go, "I'm going to be a sports doctor. I'm going to be in sidelines and locker rooms. I'm not going to be in the hospital." He goes, "First of all, you're an idiot." Which, by the way, not to offend any 18-year-olds in the world, but I think it's needless to say, right? If you're 18, you're an idiot. I got like super smart idiots in my house, but they're idiots. So yes, he then gave me the best piece of advice in my life. He said, "David, you need to be more interested than interesting. You need to be more interested than interesting." And that really resonated with me. And I changed my course. I decided I'd be a lawyer, and I did my due diligence. I said, what kind of lawyer makes the most money? Because I want to be a lawyer for the sake of buying my mom a house and a car. I want to be a lawyer for the sake of financial security. And so I did all my research, and I found that oil and gas litigators made the most money out of law school. So then I did my research and found out that Tulane University taught common and civil law, top maritime law school, maybe in the world, let alone the country, and their graduates out of law school who got hired in oil and gas made a fortune. So that's how I decided to go to the law school I wanted to go to. Right, wrong or right, at least I was putting into practice what I was taught to be more interested than interesting. Went to Tulane University, graduated top of my class, got a job out of Tulane as an oil and gas litigator with a big oil company, paying in 1992, $150,000 a year plus bonuses. That was a lot of money. That was enough to take care of my mom. But my professor, my maritime law professor, also told me about another job that he thought I'd be good at. And it was selling legal research on the internet. Now, I didn't even really know what the internet was in 1992. It was called Westlaw. And so I interviewed, ended up getting the job offer for $250,000 a year. So it was a sales job. At plan was $250,000. And so I asked my mom, what should I do? Instantly, she said, David, you need to be a real lawyer. This internet thing's a fad. Nobody will ever use the internet. This is when I learned another valuable lesson. Just because someone loves you doesn't mean they give you good advice. In fact, in your practices, I want you to think about why that is. The reason is that their advice is based off of one thing. When somebody cares about you so much and loves you so much, they just want to keep you safe. So they're going to give you advice about keeping you safe, not about what's best for you. And so we have to teach other people as well as ourselves where the advice comes from, because the fastest way to get to where you want to be is find someone that's actually already there and ask them for directions or help someone get to where they want to be. That's as simple it is. What you'll learn is one of the daily practices. My whole life is find people who are already where I want to be, ask them for directions, and help people get to where they want to be. And it helps me immediately, the fastest way to get to where I want to be, or better. And so I decided for the first time not to listen to my mom. I took the sales job. 9 months out of law school, I was a millionaire. 3 years out of law school, we sold the company for $3.4 billion in 1995. Needless to say, the positive was I could take care of my mom financially. The negative was everything in my life confirmed that money bought love and happiness. And as we know, good behaviors are only defined by what? Good behaviors are aligned with where you want to be or better. Bad behaviors interfere with them. I'll repeat that. Good behaviors are aligned with where you want to be or better. Bad behaviors are those that interfere with them. So your good behavior may be my bad behavior, depending on where we want to be. A lot of people won't realize that. And so my behaviors, although were seen as good, because where I wanted to be or better was rich. And I entered this new world from the world of not enough, being a victim, everything happened to me, to this optimistic, altruistic, humanitarian world. And you've heard of these people before, because I was one preaching and teaching this. The world happens for me. Anybody ever hear that or believe that? The world happens for me. Very positive thing. The problem is, it's still, as Bob Proctor taught me, it's a scarce proposition or a scarce predisposition to be in, because you're still trading and negotiating when the world happens for you. You're living in a zero-sum game. It's one of the biggest problems that people don't realize about this middle world or the optimistic world or the world happens for me. You end up, if you do have a lot, I told Patricia this earlier, I was buying a ton of shit I didn't need to impress people I didn't like. And it is an empty journey eventually with that type of behavior. The world happened for me. People called me Midas. You probably maybe even heard it as my friend. Everything he touches turns to gold. And I was empty. So at 30 years old, I got the first red flag that maybe my journey, my human experience wasn't what I thought it was. At 30 years old, I was married to my dream girl, who I met in the fourth grade, hated me. Sixth grade camp, I had my best friend ask her to go study. She said no. I threw an egg at her. Long journey until 26 when she started dating me. Pretty much her hiding from me every time I tried to go out with her. But in the essence of understanding this world, I was 30 years old. I had everything I ever wanted. At that time, I was running Samsung's phone division. I'd raised hundreds of millions of dollars, done all types of great things up in the Silicon Valley, given millions of dollars to charity, thought that I was living this amazing life. And at 30 years old, I'm married to my dream girl, living in Rancho Santa Fe here in San Diego, in my dream house. I had cars, boats, more cars than I knew what to do with, buying shit I didn't need to impress people I didn't like. And I remember moving in at 30 and thinking to myself, oh shit, because I felt so empty. And then on my 30th birthday, my dad, who I hadn't talked to in years, gave me a birthday present. Now, the last time I got a birthday present from my dad was when I was 10. He forgot my birthday. And he lied. That was bad enough, but he lied to me. He had a girlfriend who was closer to my age than him. He had cheated on my mom when I was 5. He wasn't the best role model in a positive way, but probably one of the best role models in a negative way. And he's helped me a lot. But at 30 years old, he sent me a gift. A big box came. I opened it up, so excited. And it was a sports coat. I put it immediately on, fit perfectly. And if you see this body, that's not easy. So I knew he must have asked someone about how to get a fitted jacket to me. And I opened it up to see if it said for my son's birthday or Armani, ripped out all the pockets in the jacket. I started to cry. My wife's like, what's the matter? I was like, that motherfucker. He can't even, after all these years, just celebrate my birthday. He has to do something to diminish my success. He's competitive with all. And she's like, whoa, 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 slow down. Give him a call. So I called him with the wrong mindset. I said, Dad, I got your birthday present. Oh, terrific. How do you like it? I don't. What do you mean? Why would you give me a jacket I can't wear? He goes, oh, jacket's not for wearing. I'm like, what do you mean? He said, it's to hang in your closet. It's like, why would I hang it in my closet? To remind you every day that money doesn't buy love or happiness. It has no pockets to remind you you can't take anything with you. Son, you're just like me. I don't want you to make the same mistakes as I've made. At 30 years old, I wasn't ready to hear that. So I told him, fuck you. I hate you. Click. First red flag that maybe my good behavior wasn't aligned with where I wanted to be or better. It was now 6 years later, I was running the most notable sports agency in the world, Lee Steinberg Sports Entertainment. They had made the movie Jerry Maguire. Warren Moon was my business partner. We had represented anybody and everybody you had ever heard of at the time. And I wanted to take my best friend, Rob Blake, to the Masters and take him with Wayne Gretzky, Joe Montana, and Warren on the NetJet to the NetJet party back to the cabins with Curtis Strange. And my friend Rob, who'd been my friend since the fourth grade, loved golf. So I was so excited to invite him. And I said, Rob, I'm so excited, man. I'm taking you to the Masters. And we're going to go do all this stuff. And he said, nah, I'm not going. I said, what do you mean you're not going? He goes, Dave, I just have to be honest. I don't like who you are and who you're surrounding yourself with. I don't want to be around it. You're going to end up dead. I was like, come on, Rob, I'm not doing what those other guys are doing. And then he hit me right in the heart and said, oh, Dave, you can lie to me all you want. You better stop lying to yourself because you're going to end up dead and I don't want to be around. I told him, of course, like a good friend, fuck you. How dare you talk to me that way? I'm trying to take you to the Masters and this is the way you treat me after all these years? Flag number two. It wasn't but 2 weeks later my life would change forever because the final flag was blown in my face. I'd represented a guy named Little John. He was a rapper. And when he had invited me to go to the Grammy Awards, so I asked my wife if I could go to the... We now have, by the way, 3 daughters, all under 6. And I asked, hey, I'd like to go to the Grammy Awards. I'm probably going to stay the night up in Beverly Hills. My wife's like, I have to be honest, you shouldn't go. I'm like, why? Well, you're not paying attention to your family, you're not paying attention to work, and you're partying so much, I'm really worried about you. You just stay at home. So I lied to her, told her I had a business meeting, went up to the Grammy Awards, took a change of clothes, thought I was really sly. By the time I got home at 5:30 or 6 in the morning, there she was waiting in the French doors, in the courtyard, waiting for me. I remember my friend who dropped me off said, do you want to spend the night at my house? I'm like, no, look at all this. What is she going to say to me? Well, I walked in and she had something to say. She told me she wasn't happy, told me I better take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become, and that she was leaving me with my kids because she didn't want to stick around to witness what was going to happen. Of course, I had a great response for her because it was well rehearsed, right? Oral sex in the hallway, fuck you too. That was pretty much it. I actually added, look around you, who do you think did all this? That was powerful. Went to bed, woke up more angry than I ever had been. I hated my mom, my dad, my best friend, and my wife. I hated them all. And then I looked over, and there was that jacket, unseen in years. It was the only piece of clothing that I could see. I just looked over, and there it was. And I realized as I broke down, I don't hate my mom, I don't hate my dad, I didn't hate my best friend Rob, and certainly didn't hate my wife, I hated myself. So I sat there and took stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. And what I came up with were these four values that I live to today. I teach these four values to thousands of kids around the world. I live by these values, and I am annoying with these values. Now, when I say annoying, it's two characteristics that are most annoying to human beings. One, repetitive, and two, honest. You want to annoy someone? Be repetitive and honest. Start with your children. You'll figure it out fast. But I am one of the most repetitive and honest people now that you'll ever meet. And I teach these four values no matter how old you are, because they are absolutely foundationally things that you can go to and live by. The first one I talked about is gratitude. The ability to find the light, the love, and the lessons in everything by giving meaning of your past so it doesn't cast shadows onto your future. It's one thing to know where you want to be or better, but if you don't align the meaning of your past with where you want to be or better, you'll never get there, I promise you. It will limit your self-image and your imagination, what you give meaning to the past. The most powerful thing is you're a commander of the universe. You're a co-creator of the universe, right? It's not the 10 demandments. God doesn't demand you 10 things. He commands you to work with you. And so we work with the universe by changing the meaning of our past. Two years after my wife said that to me, I lost everything, over $100 million. Including my mom's house. So I had to walk up to my mom's house in great humility and tell my mom that I was bankrupt. I had 33 homes in San Diego at the time. I didn't even know where all my cars were when I lost everything. That's how much money $100 million is when you're an idiot. I wish it was in community centers like it is in Africa. That'd be cooler with junior achievement as chancellor there, Napoleon Hill Institute. I wish that money was there. But it wasn't. It was in cars that I couldn't find and houses I forgot about. But I walked up to my mom's house crying, knocked on the door. Her immediate response was, "Are you okay?" "Yeah, I'm fine." "I'm crying." "Whose kids? Julie, is everybody?" "Yeah, they're fine." "Then what's the matter?" "I lost everything, including your house, Mom. You need to move." Only reason I wanted to be rich was to buy her house. And she smirked at me. I said, "Mom, you didn't hear me. I lost your home. You need to move out of your home." "I lost it." "I heard you. Do you need some money?" I then cried harder and I said, "Mom, why is God punishing me? Why would he punish me this way?" "Mom," my mom's very religious. I said, "Mom, I don't believe in God." She smirked at me again, I'll never forget, and she said the most powerful thing to me. She looked me in the eyes and said, "Oh, sweetheart, you believe in God. You just believe in the wrong God." As I was humbled again by my hero, I knew exactly what to do. I was already on my recovery road, but I also knew that I had some lessons to learn to get to where I wanted to be or better. And so through that bankruptcy, I decided that I would live with gratitude. I'd find light, love, and lessons. I'd live as a predisposition of faith. Faith, there's something bigger than me that loves me more than my mom. So somehow I was going to find the light, the love, and the lessons in this bankruptcy to promote me, protect me, love, and perfect me. 18 years later, it has. And understanding time and gratitude has helped me, knowing that the simple things to do, like saying thank you. Does anybody realize saying thank you takes 0.1 seconds and it's free? Would anybody disagree with me if I told you by being grateful would be the most impactful thing in your life? Guess what? I'm friends with a lot of thought leaders, billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, and entertainers, and not one of them have ever told me anything different than how important gratitude was in God. None of them. But here's what's so sad about the simple things to do, like 0.1 seconds and it's free. We have to remember in your business, in our business, the simple things to do are simple not to do, that by tonight, although all of you believe me, half of you won't say thank you. By tomorrow morning, another half of us won't say thank you. Within 3 days, almost all of us won't say thank you. I promise you, if you can say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up, in 30 days, your life will change for the better. An enormous amount of impact in your life. It took me 9 months. 9 months before I didn't miss a day. That's how hard the simple things to do are. That's why we do them daily. That's why I have daily practices to remind, remember, and recollect, to be annoying to myself, to be honest and repetitive, which aligns with why people can recover, understanding my heart starts and stops in the human existence divided by 24 hours. And so utilizing this, I was going to move from the world of not enough, just enough for me, to more than enough of everything for everyone. By using gratitude, the second value, empathy, forgiveness. So gratitude gives you perspective, empathy gives you ease, because it identifies the interference between you and your source. See, there's a paradigm shift that exists within the context of empathy and forgiveness, which is instead of I'm going to be happy when, it's I am doing this for the sake of. What am I doing to interfere with it? So I wake up every morning not only in gratitude, but I am. I am happy, I am healthy, I am wealthy, I am worthy. What am I doing to interfere with it? My whole day is just spent trying to figure out what I'm doing to interfere with what I already have. An unlimited, infinite amount of what? Energy. Money's energy. There's more than enough of it. Intelligence, intuition, inspiration. More than enough of it. Most people can't keep up with me. They're younger, stronger, faster. They can't keep up with me. They shadow me. I've had NBA guys, NFL guys, unbelievable Olympians, and they come out with me. And I promise you, I cannot run the 400 meters as fast as LaShawn Merritt. But when LaShawn Merritt shadowed me for a day, was sleeping in my back seat by 4 o'clock. Why? Because I've learned not to interfere with my energy. An infinite amount of energy. I have a sleep coach. I have an unwinding routine. I utilize theta meditation and quantum healing in order to facilitate, to make easy my life by identifying what it is, and I will teach in these 5 daily practices exactly how to utilize it to apply your why, not search for something you already have. Utilizing empathy gives you that ease, puts you into the flow, so you can access the infinite amount of everything for everyone. The third thing was accountability. More practical in its meaning, the purpose of accountability is actually to learn. When we're accountable, we ask ourselves, what did I do to be responsible? What did I do to attract this? What did I do to participate in this perception? And what am I supposed to learn from it? That's all accountability is. It gives you complete control of your life and understanding and utilizing time in the context of the human experience. Divided by 24 hours, you actually can be in control and live with certainty. And nothing will make you feel more easy than having certainty. Even though there'll be a variety of circumstances. God will laugh at you every day, almost every minute of the day. It won't matter to you because you'll understand the certainty of this predisposition of faith, of gratitude, forgiveness, and accountability. I'm here to learn and access what I've learned and what I haven't learned. Finally, the last one is effective communication, which is that ability to figure out what you're doing to interfere with our relationships, but not my relationship with the infinite, my God, or your God, doesn't matter. When we effectively communicate, we live in spirit, we live inspired. We're applying our why, not searching for it. 4 values: gratitude, perspective, empathy, ease, accountability, control, effective communication, inspiration. And I will send all of you all this stuff if you text me there. I'm going to give away my books to everyone. I have a search engine for these videos, so I will give you access to anything you write down. You can use the search engine. I'll send you exercises, guides, books. I've written too many of them, but they're easily accessible. So just write down what resonates with you and what will give you access to everything to make it easy. So now that we know the 4 values that are based on this idea of shifting a paradigm of faith, notating that wisdom and faith are what? They shorten the distance of resistance that we create in our life. Wisdom and faith will shorten the distance of resistance that we create in our life between us and the infinite, everything that's already there. So we have to now live our human experience to do this. Right? You've been given a body. You're here to learn lessons. I'm here to learn lessons. We're going to forget them all, but we have the power to remember them. Therefore, we have to figure out this whole human experience thing so that we are what? Enjoying the consistent everyday, persistent without quit, pursuit of our own truth, our own potential. By figuring out what we're doing to interfere with it, because our potential is already there. So we have daily practices. Why are they daily practices? Well, as you know, in recovery, daily practices are the easiest and best way behaviorally to get to where we want to be or better. It also, by the way, is the only certainty that we have. You are guaranteed 24 hours a day, every day of your life, except for the last day. It's the only certainty I can give you. And everybody, every human being on earth has that one certainty. Nothing else is certain. It's all circumstantial, perspective, variety of different things that cause us to give different relativity, meaning, and usage of time. But 24 hours, certain. So we want to have daily practices that are based on 24 hours. And the first daily practice to get you to where you want to be or better, believe it or not, is actually thinking about, where do I want to be or better? What is it I want today, according to my non-negotiable and negotiable behaviors, according to what I want, where do I want to be or think that I want to be or better today, according to non-circumstance and circumstance? And I'll get to that in the later daily practice. So the first step is to have a daily practice to say, this is what I want today, according to my non-negotiables and negotiable behaviors, circumstance and non-circumstance, I call it, in alignment with where I think I want to be in the future, and here's the meaning of the lessons of my past to get me there. I am no longer punished. I'm promoted, protected, loved, and perfected by the meaning I give my divine direction, which also will help with the detours which become divine as well. Because I have that perspective, this is not what I want, and we're going to teach through the daily practice of what happens when circumstances occur that you don't want. How do we create and re-engineer a detour as divine as well? So the second step, I've already told you, the second practice, we want what we want in a divine direction, where we want to be or better, think we want to be better, by giving meaning to the past and aligning it as well. The second daily practice is know your who. I talked about it. Know who can help you, who already sits in that position of where you want to be or better, and who you can help get to where they want to be or better. Anybody ever hear, this is very Napoleon Hill-esque, you're the aggregate of the five people you spend the most time with. You've heard that? More bullshit. No, honestly, like, my wife spent a lot of freaking time, right, with five kids. She is not the aggregate of a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old. Like, who came up with that dumb shit? Honestly, I will tell you what they really meant by it, though. That this is my sports background coming. You need to understand the subject matter, topic, and expertise in which you want in your life, the behaviors that you want to get you to where you want to be or better. And then you pick what team you want to play for and what position you want to play on that team. So if you want to be on this family team with me, I want to be the captain of my family team. Or I want to be the owner of my family team, or I want to be the point guard of my family team. I don't want to be the water boy. But I'm picking my team. I know which one of my family members are there that sit in a position, like my mom, to teach me how and what to do to build a family. I'm not going to my dad. Let my dad be the water boy. He's on my team. He's on my team of relativity, but he's the water boy. I'm going to help him get to where he wants to be. But my mom, she's the owner of the team captain. So I'm going to keep asking her, hey, what do you do when your kid does this? How do you, right? Because she's where I want to be or better. If I could be half the parent that she was when she passed away, I would be fine. That's how good of a parent she was. She is the Michael Jordan of moms. And I mean that. And so she's on my team for that. But I also have different businesses, subject matters, AI. I have an AI team. I'm the water boy on the AI team. But I got the guy that did the AI for Clear. I have the other guy who works for ESPN that created AI to pull highlights from whatever. Those guys are on my team. So I'm looking to see subject matter, topic, expertise, where I want to be or better, and I'm picking my team and my position. Notating the team has to have people that are on it that I can get to where I want to be or better, or team members that I can help get to where they want to be. Much better than saying you're the aggregate of the five people you spend the most time with. It's okay. You can spend more time being the captain of your family and spending, you know, a lot of time with your kids when they're young. That's okay. But that's not the aggregate of who you are. You should have other teams. You want to play tennis? Go to that team and play tennis. If you want to volunteer for the home, that's another team you might want to do while you're a mom of five kids on that team. That's cool. And so as we're working through this who, we start realizing that most people live their lives. This is also Napoleon Hill-esque. Anybody ever read Outwitting the Devil? I'm sure a lot of people read Think and Grow Rich, right? Anyone hear Think and Grow Rich? Not one of the best entrepreneur books. Outwitting the Devil is way better. Because he talks about 98% of the people on earth are drifters. 2% live indefiniteness of purpose. Indefiniteness of purpose. They know for the sake of what they're doing things. And today, it's extremely important to get the exponentiality of your life, to have a definiteness of purpose, to know what you want and who you could help. Why? Because most people live like tubes. Excuse, this probably hurt your dinner, but food in, food out. Most people are tubes. They live in nothingness. Every day, like the myth of Sisyphus in Camus the Stranger, pushing a boulder to the top of the hill just to have it roll down to the bottom. If you want just to change the nothingness in life, think about what you want. It becomes a possibility, a mathematical advantage. Know your who, it now becomes a probability, another mathematical advantage, simply with mindset. This is what I want in the trajectory of where I want to be, or better, aligning the meaning with it, and this is who I can help and who can help me. The third daily practice, know your how. This is where the time comes in. So if you're going to know how this gets done, you have to understand time. Because you are given 24 hours a day. Now let me give you the E's and cheat codes that I've learned. These are probably the greatest practices that changed my life. One, notating the fact that there's 24 hours and the number one non-negotiable of those 24 hours is your sleep. I no longer, Greg, want to be in the Hall of Fame for pro football. I represented them. I love them. I want to be in the Hall of Fame of sleep. I do. I have a sleep coach for the last 18 years. I utilize and spend more money on my bed than any car that I have. And I have an unwinding routine that puts my mind, body, and soul in a position to recover and access information, thereby using theta meditation to transcend that information now into my day. So I'm plateauing, growing, and elevating my awareness because everything's vibrating. Theta energy, theta meditation allows me to elevate my frequency, my vibration, knowing that I can only be aware of that which vibrates equal to or less than me. Earth vibrates the slowest, plants, animal, sound, thought. Number one thought that vibrates the fastest is the truth, your truth. So I utilize my sleep just for math's sake to make it easy on all of you. 8 hours a day minimum, non-negotiable. What does non-negotiable mean? That means non-negotiable. No matter what, I am getting 8 hours of sleep every day for recovery and access. Now, I'm human, God laughs at me, there's an emergency at 2 a.m. and I gotta take my mom to the hospital, I don't get my 8 hours of sleep that day, it now becomes a double non-negotiable and I double prioritize it the next day. I'm never stacking L's. So all of a sudden I've now cut out a third of my 24 hours into the greatest certainty and the greatest power that I have, which is sleep. To recover, anybody knows, the better you recover, the better you perform, and access the higher information, which makes life easy. It's that simple. So those 8 hours are the way. Now I take another 4 hours of awake time, of the remaining 16 hours of awake time, and I make those non-negotiable. So I put in a minimum amount of time. For me, it's an hour minimum for my health, which is strength, balance, cardio. Basically, when you're talking about your health, you guys know this better than I, but I love simple and best options. Here's how I see health. God gave us a body. And he said, you get from the time this thing starts till it stops to use this body to learn. He then says, there's only 5 things that you need to keep your heart beating or to make it beat longer. One, you need to breathe. If you don't breathe, I'm going to stop your heart. Anybody disagree? You guys are more versed in this. So then why aren't you spending money learning how to breathe? Like, why are you worried about Ozempic when you could pay that money to learn how to breathe and God's already told you you're going to live longer if you learn how to breathe? Same thing with sleep, by the way. Two, what does he say? Well, you need to eat or you're going to die. Then why aren't you spending your money making sure that you are eating correctly? He's already told you the secrets of this human experience in the human body that he gave you in order to learn the lessons, right? It's right there. Then he says you got to drink. Once again, why aren't you figuring out, spending your money, time, attention, and intention, doing, saying, thinking, feeling, believing, how am I drinking every day? Then he says, you need to move. You don't move, you die. Why aren't you spending money on how you move? Sleep, I already said. You don't sleep, you die. Same thing. So for me, sleep's taken care of. The other four are within the minimum of an hour a day on my health for breathing, eating, drinking, and movement. Balance, strength, cardio, etc. Meditation. Minimums. These are minimum non-negotiable. If you don't know what non-negotiable is, I'm going to tell you how you figure it out. If you can make it a Michael Jordan rule, then it's non-negotiable. What does that mean? I wake up at 4 a.m. every morning. I meditate for 20, transcend that information, and then I go into my exercise, my health routine. I can promise you, not every day, especially when I'm traveling, at 4:30, am I super stoked to do my health routine. So I ask myself, is this a non-negotiable? And then I ask myself, if Michael Jordan was waiting at the gym for me, would you go? Everybody know who Michael Jordan is, by the way? Yeah, so my answer, especially on my non-negotiables, is always, hell yes, I would go. Then go. Because for the sake of what you're trying to be healthy for, way more important than going to meet Michael Jordan to work out. But you're willing to go work out because Michael Jordan's there, you should be willing to work out to live longer and support your family and your community, to do good, to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun. Because if you're healthy, you get as many wishes a day as you want. No matter how much money you have. If you're healthy, you get as many wishes as you want. We're already talking about these as possibilities. But if you're unhealthy, you only get one wish. Go ask Steve Jobs. He had plenty of money. When he died, he had one wish.
To be healthy.
To be healthy. Hell yeah. So I break my day down into the non-negotiables of sleep, health, family next, a minimum of an hour a day on your family, 2 minutes a day in all of these, by the way, if you study physics, quantum physics, and metaphysics, I'll save you the time. 2 minutes a day is worth 2 hours on a Saturday. Even with your kids. I give 2 minutes to my three daughters who are 26, 24, and 21. I give them a minimum of 2 minutes a day. I make sure all four of my kids get a message every day from me that says, I am proud of you, I love you, and I always have your back. Still today, I text my mom. For 18 years, I told my mom every day of her life, in my road to recovery, I am happy, I am healthy, I love you, and I appreciate you. I kept her number when she passed. It's on my plan. I text her every single day. Now I know she actually is getting it. But guess what? My relationship healed with my mom because she stopped making me do things to prove that I'm happy, I'm healthy, I love and appreciate her, which are the only four things a parent wants to know about their kids. I let my kids know every day, did you do your best? Did you learn lessons and did you have fun? That's all I want. I don't give a shit what you do, but did you do? And doing your best, by the way, isn't giving 100%. Once again, balance is a great idea. Giving 100% of everything you have for everything you do is bullshit. It's humanly impossible. Within the context of the circumstance of the day, of how you feel and what's going on, did you do your best? You didn't study 15 hours, but did you do your best according to the circumstances? So non-negotiable, sleep, health, family, finance. How many of you look at your account balances every day? Just look at them. Make a practice from today on. It'll be the best financial advice I give you. Your balances, your accounts have a consciousness. It's my employees, they'll tell you, they are amazed. I own multiple businesses. I just had a $586 million exit today that I was part of. And to the dollar, there's something in my head that I know exactly what's in my accounts. Because I start picking up, people are like, well, I think that's $900 off. They're like, come on, dude, there's no, and then they look, oh. One of the reasons I lost everything is I didn't have that consciousness of what I had. Just check your balances. Put a minimum amount of time towards your finance or activity you get paid for. Remember, there's just activities you have planned, unplanned, paid for, unpaid for, and sleep. Circumstantial, uncircumstantial, non-negotiable, negotiable behaviors. That's all you have in 24 hours. And so non-negotiables, once again, these 4 hours include what? My health, my family, finance, faith, the study of relativity. So I'm constantly improving the meaning and the study of time. So I use time better. So 12 hours of my day is certain. You following me? No matter what happens, 12 hours of my day is certain. Interest rates, tsunamis, fires, doesn't matter. 12 hours of my life, that's a half of my life is certain. Do you know how much easier my life is than yours if half of my life is certain? Now, the other half is just preparing for God to laugh at me, so I learn the next step, which is do it now or do it next. Do it now or do it next. The fourth daily practice. We know our what, that's a possibility. Our who's a probability. Our how is a perspective. Do it now is reality. 100% of the things you do now get done. 100% of the things you do next will get done too. I hate statistics. In fact, one of my favorite statistics ever is 99% of all statistics are made up. That's about as true as 100% of the putts you take that are short won't go in. They're all the same. But do it now. So how do we do it now? Well, ironically, you got to know your what, your who, and your how to do it now. You need to know what's important to you today according to the non-negotiable and circumstances that exist today. You need to know what's important to you in alignment with where you want to be or better so you can readjust, reprioritize your day in alignment with the divine direction. Your detours now become divine. Anybody ever here procrastinate? Anybody ever here feel overwhelmed? I have the antidote. It's impossible to procrastinate or feel overwhelmed if you prioritize. If you know what to do now and know what to do next, you will never feel overwhelmed. You'll feel blessed and abundant. Man, I got so many options and opportunities and touches of favor. My biggest challenge is prioritizing the ones that are most important to me according to my non-negotiable and the circumstances that exist today. Giving me more ease, because now I know it's just a matter of what? Pre-prioritization, prioritization, and reprioritization of what's important to me according to the circumstances of the day, which is only 12 hours of my day that's circumstantial because the other 12 hours are certain. Do it now. Do it next. You'll be amazed what happens in your life. And then finally, my favorite, the fifth daily practice. Apply your why. You have to shift the paradigm. No longer can you live in this world, I'll be happy when. I lived in that world. When never came. I just got emptier and emptier. My bank got fuller. I got emptier and emptier and emptier. I'll be happy when I make my... I remember saying to my mom at 5 or 6, I will be so happy when I make $1 million. I'm going to buy you a house and a car and retire for life. That came and gone. I live my life and I am for the sake of what? Who? How and now. For the sake of what am I doing this? I'm going to, or I have, or it's done, make over $100 million for the sake of empowering over 1 billion people in the world to change their lives by teaching them how to make money, help people, and have fun. Because I've never met anyone in the world who makes a lot of money, helps a lot of people, and has a lot of fun every day that isn't happy. I've never met anyone. They're super stoked all the time. Right? I have freedom in my life because I've reached a point through these daily practices of applying my why that I do what I want, when I want, with who I want for as long as I want. So when Greg Champion calls, if I don't already have a commitment of something I wanted to do with who and when, then I'm going to say yes, because that's who I want to do it with, when I want to do it, for as long as I want to do it. That's freedom. And it comes from making a lot of money, helping a lot of people, and having a lot of fun. So how do we do this? This is probably my greatest life code of all. And I paid millions of dollars of therapy for this. Anybody ever wonder what you're afraid of or sat in the therapy session and the doctor's like, here's what you're afraid of? And I'm like, huh, really doesn't resonate with me. And then I start thinking, man, I got like millions of past lives because I take the best option of life. I got 1 million past lives. And then I know I have womb trauma. And then I had... infant trauma, toddler trauma. Then I had teen trauma, tween first trauma, then teen, then 20s, 30s, 40s, and now I have 50s trauma. They're called three beautiful daughters. The drama or trauma, either one. So I started thinking to myself, you know what, maybe I gotta approach this fear, this trauma and fear thing differently. Instead of spending all this money trying to figure out what I'm afraid of or what trauma I've suffered, what if I learned and looked for the clues and the patterns of how I react to the fear, to the trauma? Interesting about the reaction to fear and the reaction to trauma, it's instant and obvious, right? You're worried because you're afraid. Doesn't take me long to know I'm worried. You're frustrated, not long. Mad, aggravated. You're offended, guilty, resentful, separate, inferior, superior. They're instant and obvious. Already I felt better because I was saving a shitload of time because I didn't have to worry about what I was afraid of. I could just figure out instantly and obviously something was wrong when I was pissed off, worried, resentful, guilty, separate, inferior, superior, anxious. All those things were instant and obvious. So what I decided to apply my why was to no longer worry about what I'm afraid of or the trauma that I've had. Elevate my awareness to the reaction that I have to the fear, and then control the response. Because reactions are not responses. Reactions happen in human experience through chemicals in autonomy, right? In being. You don't and can't stop if someone cuts you off from, fuck you. Oh, look. That's a reaction. It's the response that we should start looking at. And I have figured out the best use of our time, energy, emotion, and values in the response to the reaction to fear. So when I get angry, worried, upset, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, guilty, or resentful, my response to that is not to go over it, under it, through it, around it, lie to it, cheat it, manipulate it, deny it, logic it, analyze it. Anybody ever go to school and you're sitting there all night, oh, let it go, let it go, let it go, and then you wake up going, let it go? Just logic's on a different frequency than emotion. It's not going to solve it. So in the predisposition of my faith that there's something bigger than me that loves me more than my mom, instead of trying to resist it, go over it, over, under it, around it, lie to it, cheat it, manipulate it, and deny it, I have one simple response to the reactions. Stop. The instant and obvious, my mind, body, and soul are on fire, I just stop. I have trained myself. I just have one response to the reaction to fear. I just stop. And I breathe. And I drop. Back down to center. Knowing my baseline from the day, all aggregating the self and the what, the who, the how, and the now, applying my why, I stop and I breathe and I drop to center. And when the chemicals dissipate from me, right, you have that 6 seconds, and then it takes 180 to 360 seconds in order for the chemicals to dissipate. Once they've dissipated, now I remind, remember, and recollect to my God. What do I want? Who can I help? Who can help me? How best can I get that done? And I reprioritize. So in other words, when your mind, body, and soul are on fire, just to prove to you how great my mom was, she always taught me when you're on fire, you gotta stop, you gotta drop, you gotta roll into the divine. So I promise you all today, if you live with these values, gratitude, empathy, accountability, and effective communication, and utilize those in daily practices in the human experience, separated by 24 hours, giving it non-negotiable and negotiable behaviors, making your life easy by identifying the dis-easy, knowing what you want in a divine direction, aligning the meaning of the past in that direction, knowing who you can help and who can help you, and how to get it done in the utilization of time to be productive, accessible, and gracious. Prioritizing your now and your next, and then applying your why. I promise you three things. You'll make a lot of money, you'll help a lot of people, and you'll have a lot of fun. I promise you, you'll be happy. And then, knowing this group, you'll empower others to be happy as well, which makes my mission come true, which is over 1 billion people by filing 1,000 people like you to empower 1,000, to empower 1,000. 1,000 times 1,000 is 1,000,000, 1,000,000 times 1,000 is 1,000,000,000. Out of great humility, my name is David Meltzer, which means beloved servant.